Cryptocurrencies are still in their infancy, despite over a decade of evolution and seemingly endless amounts of newspaper headlines. Since 2009, countless coins have been launched, with varying degrees of success. In this podcast series, we'll be looking at one in particular, Scotcoin. Scotcoin is new, it's unique, it's made to do good, and it could revolutionise the market. Join me, Temple Melville, as I give you all you need to know about this exciting and bold new project. Good morning, everyone, and very nice to see everybody looking so well and happy this morning. We're joined today for our tax podcast from people working for KPMG. We are joined by Suzanne Dixon, who's KPMG's Finance Services Direct Tax Partner, by Bethany Leslie, who is the Manager of Indirect Tax for KPMG, and by Ian Taylor, who is KPMG Head of Crypto and Digital Assets and also Chair of Crypto UK, the body that oversees quite a lot of the people who are involved in crypto in the UK. If I can come to you first of all, Suzanne, how is crypto treated for tax purposes? This is something I'm frequently asked.
So I think with regard to crypto, I think it's the appreciation that not everything is the same. So obviously we have different types of crypto assets, whether it's exchange tokens, security tokens, potentially going into central bank digital currencies, stable coins, etc. And so with regard to that, it's unfortunately not one size fits all. So at the moment, we don't have any specific UK direct tax legislation around crypto, other than a recent amendment in relation to the investment manager exemption, which I can touch on later. And this is not dissimilar to other jurisdictions. And HMRC has not been keen to introduce specific legislation, as they think it would be difficult to align on the underlying definitions to support it. At the moment, the industry is constantly evolving. And I think they question whether in this current environment, legislation would work effectively to cover all the possibilities whilst not producing unintended consequences. And so what they've done instead is gone with a kind of 80-20 principles-based approach through the issuance of guidance in its crypto assets manual. And this is intended to evolve. They have been clear on that. But at present, it really only covers exchange tokens, so the likes of Bitcoin and ETH, and not the wider tokens I just mentioned. And HMRC on the direct tax side have been engaging in this space for about the last 5 years and are keen to move that forward. And I think as Beth will go on to talk about, a shorter period, we'll say, from the VAT side. And I think that does come through in that manual with regard to kind of how little there is on VAT compared to corporate tax and income tax. So I think to get to the right answer, even if something is in the manual, I think it's because of this 80-20 approach, it's really key that you understand exactly what the product and the transaction is. And I think the use of terminology, smart contracts, etc., is not standardized in the same way as we see with TradFi. And therefore, you really need to get into the detail and the legal foundations to align the realities of what that crypto asset may be doing with this guidance and legislation. And a lot of these difficulties stem from the fact that, you know, at present we don't have that underlying accounting or regulatory framework that we use as the basis for a lot of our other tax legislation, albeit, as Ian will talk about, we will start to see some of that legislation hopefully coming through over the next year or two. And I think that will then give HMRC the potential ability to build on those regulatory definitions, etc., to perhaps expand how we look at taxing it from a direct tax perspective. I think just the final thing to say on this is, at the moment, because our crypto assets are generally not viewed as currency by HMRC because they are not assets backed by a central bank, this means that they fall outside a lot of the usual parameters for financial services products. The one exception to that is security tokens. They may fall under current UK tax legislation rules, but they'd need to be a security. So I think we are in that world where quite a few of these crypto assets can diverge from traditional financing product taxation principles, even though they're trying to mimic these products. And that can result in a different corporate tax treatment than we may expect. So, for example, you may end up in the capital gains rules and the need to look at pooling. these things may be treated as intangible assets or potentially even miscellaneous income. So I think, unfortunately, to answer your question, there's no short answer, an easy answer. And it's really looking at that detail and understanding truly what you're dealing with and how then it aligns with existing UK tax legislation and how we can extrapolate that with the help of HMRC's guidance.
That's very interesting. I think this is one of the great areas of misrepresentation, in fact, is everyone seems to think that there isn't going to be legislation in terms of crypto for UK tax purposes. But personally, I think there is going to be, because there are, as you say, a lot of areas that need to be clarified and worked through. And you mentioned two other things there. One was about CBDC, which is the famous Britcoin. One of the great things I like about the idea of a stable currency backed by the Bank of England is they can use it directly into people's crypto wallets as expansionary workings. Instead of having to do QE, which has a lot of sort of byproducts, they can just give people the money. It's a proper airdrop. And I think that would be very good. And one of the things that I did dig out about all this is that airdrops are not regarded as income. So you don't have to pay tax on them by the look of it. So that seems very good. Although I'm quite sure at the end of the day, HMRC is going to work out that there are other ways that they can get money from here, there and everywhere. So we shall see. And so just going back on to what you were saying there about jurisdictions, I mean, the UK is obviously one jurisdiction. Is it massively different in the UK? Is it massively different in Germany or Europe generally? Is it how are they treated over there?
Of course. I mean, I think just to touch on your previous question, Temple, around the regulations and how crypto is taxed. I know Suzanne touched on the direct tax perspective, but just to quickly brush over the VAT side. And I like what Suzanne said, we don't have much, if at all, legislation that covers any form of crypto assets or coins. So this means that when we do need to determine the VAT liability of something, we have to agree this with the policy team at HMRC. Now, as Suzanne said, regulations are going to hit the UK over the coming months following the FCA consultation, which our colleague Ian Taylor will mention a bit later in this podcast. And it could be that whatever regulation is formed drives some VAT principles. Now, it can be argued that HMRC are slightly further forward in confirming the direct tax treatment of crypto. And it's also clear that the direct tax and VAT appear to be going down very different directions on the treatment of cryptocurrencies. And the policy teams for each are not necessarily talking to each other. And this is likely to give rise to some challenges in the future. and that comes down to the point, as Suzanne said, from a direct tax perspective, a lot of cryptocurrencies are not considered to be currency, whereas in some aspects of VAT, that could be a different conversation. Now, that being said, we do in KPMG have direct working groups with HMRC's dedicated crypto team. And it's in those teams that we discuss potential VAT treatments, direct tax treatments, and our policies that should be applied to each different product. Now, going on to your next question, in terms of the consistency across different jurisdictions. So at present, there is some consistency of treatment of cross-border from a VAT perspective. But most countries are formulating their own liability positions, as you can probably imagine. So the UK, Switzerland, Cyprus, Ireland, and some other jurisdictions are quite advanced in their VAT thinking, whereas others are maybe not so advanced. So, for example, the central bank of cryptocurrencies is quite an interesting topic. So in China, the only legal cryptocurrency is a central bank issued one. Now, this does cause an interesting tension with the decentralized model that cryptocurrencies generally are supposed to set up to challenge. Now, even though we in the UK do still have a long way to go, we are considered by most countries to be one of the most advanced in its VAT treatment for crypto assets. But I guess what this sector needs to be quite careful about is probably number one, assuming that there's similarity of VAT treatment between different crypto assets. So, i.e., one size doesn't necessarily fit all. And then number two would probably be the risk of double or more taxation when operating internationally. And this also, given the cross-border impact from a VAT perspective, there could be local VAT registration and reporting obligations in different territories. And this is even where there's not a physical presence. So that's probably two of the biggest things that this sector needs to be aware of, especially with different businesses who are operating on a more global basis.
Yes, I suppose one of the critical things in terms of tax treatment of crypto is that there is no such thing as a homogenous being in crypto. They're all different, unlike, you know, pounds and dollars and whatever it is. Fiat currency is all one thing, as it were. So I think that obviously makes things much more difficult. So I just want to actually bring in Ian just on one thing quickly now. What is your reaction to the UK and government's announcement in relation to its move to regulate crypto assets? And what are the key themes you're seeing? And I think that ties in with what we've been talking about, is how the regulation is going to be phrased and so on is going to have a big impact on what the tax regulations are going to come out as.
Sure. Thank you for the question, Temple. Well, interestingly, regulation is something that the industry has been calling for a number of years. And finally, we have some clarity here in the UK, as you mentioned, with the government's consultation, which was announced on the 1st of February, which is still live. And we will respond to this consultation, naturally. And interestingly, we're talking about tax here, and we have some wonderful colleagues from KPMG that are in the weeds, pushing forward with some of the tax aspects. And a lot of people focus on regulation, but perhaps don't have their eye on the taxation implications, which in fact can be quite onerous in terms of resource requirement, both cost and reporting wise. So I would urge people to not just look at the regs, but also the tax. But yeah, from the discussions I've had with many folks in the community, both within those in the sort of crypto space and also our traditional finance clients, largely are positive with what the UK government is suggesting. And what they're suggesting is to regulate the activity under what is the Regulated Activities Order, or the RAO, which sits under the Financial Services Markets Act, not to regulate the individual token. And we know that there's many different types of category of token. Not all crypto assets do the same thing. And I'm using token and crypto assets interchangeably. So that's a positive in terms of these aren't financial products. However, much of the activity, such as custody, running a trading venue, market abuse, covering consumer protections, operating an intermediary, you know, introducing or a brokerage, all will be regulated in a similar way to financial services. And this piece of suggested regulation by the UK government is somewhat a depart from what the Europeans are suggesting in their overarching markets in crypto assets, insofar as that's a fully bespoke regime. Everything in that is new, and that will fall into effect for the 27 member states next year at some point, where the UK has taken this second mover approach, picked some of the good parts out of MiCA and left some behind, but is a bit of a blend of existing regulations, as I mentioned, within Financial Services Markets Act or FSMA, but also some bespoke regimes such as DeFi, such as listing of tokens on exchanges and the disclosures that should go with that. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the feedback is from the private sector. And we'll also expect some additional roundtables, which we hope to be involved in with the government, to sort of make sure the UK does spin up proportionate and balanced regulation is what we keep hearing from them. So, yeah, interesting time.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And it's good to know. I'm a great proponent of regulation, I must admit. I believe it's very necessary for the good of crypto as a whole. Suzanne, if I can just come back to you in a minute, because this has been pointed out now. What are the record keeping and reporting requirements for crypto now? I know that there was a change announced during the 2023 budget, so there must be some alterations.
Yeah, that's correct. We did see a change announced at the spring budget that means the reporting requirements have changed, but this change is only going to affect some taxpayers. So if people were already complying with their reporting obligations, it shouldn't present a significant change, but hopefully it will continue to increase the transparency in this area. So for those people who are trading in crypto assets, either individually or through a company, those profits and losses should already be captured as trading profits and taxed as such. Historically, though, as an individual, if you're filling out your tax return and you're not viewed as trading, which is a relatively high bar, you're most likely to be treating any profits from the sale of the gain, the crypto, as a general capital gains item. But this wouldn't have fallen with any of the within any of the other specified sections on the tax return that we usually see, such as land, shares, etc. But from April 24, there's now going to be a separate section in the capital gains pages of the UK tax return for crypto assets. And so I think whilst this new section will bring clarity for the need to report and finally confirm for some that HMRC do not view proceeds from crypto assets as gambling and therefore exempt, taxpayers are still going to face complexity when it comes to the calculation of their tax liabilities due to the need to combine results from potentially a large volume of transactions across a number of wallets. But even with this change, it does beg an interesting question of whether people fully understand their reporting responsibilities. So I can remember I was at a discussion with NGO taxpayer group who were talking about population engagement in this area and whether for those people who ordinarily don't have to file a tax return but are earning returns on crypto over and above potentially their annual limits, whether they realise that they do have to report and pay tax on these items. So I think there is still that potential gap around realisation on the responsibility of individuals to report, as these people may never have had to file a tax return before.
I think people in general seem to regard crypto as sort of not quite the same thing and therefore they don't have to do anything about it. But that is quite wrong, obviously. Beth, you were just about to say something about it.
Oh, yes. From a VAT perspective, I think, you know, record keeping can either support or not the VAT treatment that you have charged on the supply that you make. So from a business perspective, it is really important to get the record keeping right. Now, at the moment, they're the same as direct tax. There's not much guidance out there. But as a starting point, businesses, we would recommend to follow the normal record keeping rules for VAT purposes. And in terms of the records that should be kept, this is along the lines of the date of the transaction, the value of the transaction, the customer, the supplier, where they're located, and possibly from a crypto perspective, your digital wallet records, which should show a breakdown of cryptocurrencies, digital assets that are remaining with you. Now, we have asked HMRC what information they would accept to prove the location of the customer, because we know this is quite a tricky point. And they have said an IP address and something else that matches that IP address. Now, unfortunately, this often doesn't work with for crypto trading, where a customer might be using an alternative computer or someone is trading for them. But we've also noted that other jurisdictions don't know how to fix this issue too. However, as I say earlier, we would ask businesses to retain all information that they can to support the VAT treatment that they have applied. And we, of course, at KPMG do support our clients with knowing the common reporting standards, which includes the likes of, you know, record keeping and, of course, making tax digital, which was introduced in recent years for all taxpayers in the UK. And we have seen similar changes and advancements of digitalisation of VAT compliance responsibilities outside of the UK too. So at KPMG, we do have that holistic approach to help clients be comfortable in their record keeping amongst other compliance obligations.
That's really nice to know that KPMG are helping their clients. I like to hear that. That's always good. Sometimes one wonders, but not with KPMG. Ian, sorry, can we come back to you now? So one of the big things that's been happening recently, as you know, is the collapse of FTX. I mean, from my perspective, I think it's having, or it has had, quite a large impact on the crypto industry as a whole. And it's obviously ongoing with other, you know, Silverdale and so on, one thing and another. How do you feel about it?
In a word, frustrated. by what is, in my view, nothing to do with the technology. We have to separate out, you know, what is a transformative set of technologies, distributed ledger and the blockchain being a form of that, new ways to transact value in the native crypto assets that are minted or born out of those underlying infrastructure. It's always the few that spoil it for the many, and we don't know all the details, but many of the details about this particular organization have been made public, and this will play out in the courts of law in the US. But, you know, we do know that there was pretty poor governance, some of the poorest that we've seen, and that's actually been quoted by the chap who's running the bankruptcy in the US, who also ran the Enron bankruptcy, that he'd never seen any record keeping and form of governance at this level to be so poor and woeful. Add in the fact that the organization was being run offshore in, you know, not in a G7 country, by people that perhaps were inexperienced in the numbers that were involved here, in the tens of billions, not to mention there was no real oversight, any board positions, a chief risk officer, you know, CFO, any third party auditing, which is one thing naturally that KPMG does support in terms of making sure that these organizations are fit and proper across many aspects of risk, whether it be operational, resilience, cybersecurity, and, you know, natural governance. So, you know, one could say that collapse had forced the focus on the industry from all areas, not just the public sector, but from the media and from the private sector. And that is unfortunate. This industry does sometimes not do itself any favors in terms of the brand of crypto. But that being said, as I started, it doesn't detract from the innovative nature of the technology, and people are still building new products and services, whether that be within the DeFi space or different types of tokens such as NFTs, non-fungible tokens, which bring in a whole host of new users into the industry.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point, that despite everything that's happened, there is still a lot of ongoing development and a lot of ongoing adoption by people of crypto and so on. I mean, one of the things, or two of the things, that people say about crypto is that it is a great store of value and it's really good for transferring value. I mean, would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, there's a number of ways to answer that. I'll try and keep it as brief as possible and not fly off onto a number of tangents. But we know that Bitcoin, for example, is as the biggest blockchain. Its native token has been described as digital gold, because it does have a deflationary monetary policy. By that, I mean designed into the network and the protocol is the fact that at some point in a decade or so, there will be a limited supply. And so what that does is, in the economics of the system, will allow for demand to increase as the network gets more users and supply to decrease, which will result in price increase in general economic sense. So that is one way to look at it as an alternative store of value. However, let's also temper that with the volatile price of the asset class. In a short horizon, if you look at just a year, it pushed up the price of Bitcoin, that is, to 60,000 and back down to the lows of 16.16, so 60.60 to 16, and is now about 21,000. But if you look at a longer term horizon, and this is what the traders, you know, the professional investors will do over a longer term horizon, you know, the graph looks very different. It is on a steady incline. And just like gold as an equivalent store of value is finite, there's only so much amount of gold that's going to be dug out the ground in the future, and that has been already, versus this, you know, cap on how many Bitcoins will be supplied. But a lot of people will also say, you know, what's the value proposition? This is backed by nothing. It's not backed by, you know, government. It's not backed by a real world asset that's tangible, such as gold or another commodity or precious metal. For me, the value proposition is in the fact that this was designed as a peer-to-peer trustless payment peer-to-peer network. Now, whether Western countries are using Bitcoin to pay for goods and services, no, because of the volatile price. That being said, in other jurisdictions that perhaps don't have as stable economies and their central banks aren't as good as managing inflation, for example, that Bitcoin is being used for what it's designed for. So that's what gives it value, this proposition that you can transfer value seamlessly across borders in a matter of seconds and minutes at perhaps a lower cost than you can through traditional remittance services.
I think, yes, I think that's very true. I mean, I think one of the things that's said about Bitcoin is what makes it valuable is the fact of the number of people who are involved both in holding it and, in fact, in mining it, which is a slight misnomer, as we all know, but I'm sure that's true. The other thing that interests me very much, and I just was thinking about this the other day, is and the simple fact that we have three or four people who are directly involved in KPMG with crypto is how seriously KPMG take crypto as a thing. And I really like the idea that you have a head of crypto, which is Ian sitting there. I think is a wonderful validation of the fact that crypto is here to stay, because I'm quite sure KPMG wouldn't be bothering if they thought it was a flash in the pan. So that's great comfort to me anyway. Obviously, from that point of view, KPMG is very into crypto, and you have obviously people who are dealing with it and working with it.
Indeed. And I was brought into the firm, well, I started a year ago, but obviously started talking to folks in the firm a long time before that, born out of the fact that this is demand-led by our clients. Our clients, a lot of them operate within financial services, want to launch a product or service that touches crypto. And so, you know, we can't, as a, you know, a big advisory firm supporting the UK economy and the global economy, because we're a global firm operating out of most, you know, jurisdictions, are being asked about the industry, not just the regulatory space, not just the tax space, legal, and also some of the cybersecurity issues that we provide these services across the piece. It is an indication, as you said, Temple, of legitimizing this industry, because there are many folks that are now involved in it, and we, KPMG and others, are there to support the evolution. And hopefully one of the things we do, especially around tax, is support our clients with making sure they are tax compliant in whatever jurisdiction they operate in.
Yeah, I really like that idea. And I mean, it sort of validates the thought that there are more and more people becoming involved in the crypto space, even although it might not appear so from a casual reading of some of the newspapers. But you did touch on other technologies, Ian, in connection with crypto, like, Web3 and the metaverse and so on. I'm a terrible skeptic about NFTs. I can see some uses for NFTs, but not very many. And I certainly don't fancy having a picture of an ape with a different colour on it or anything like that. But there are people who do want to do that, and that's perfectly valid. How do you see the Web3 and the metaverse as dealing with crypto in the future? Do you think it's going to have a big impact? Do you think crypto will have less of an impact because of it? Or how do you see it?
Yeah, well, what we see with the clients we talk to, not just in financial services, but across many different sectors, is that, you know, this new iteration of the Web3 or the metaverse, you know, these terms are kind of used interchangeably, is just a new set of technologies that allow for consumer interaction, allow for communities to build, allow for new ways for organizations to display their products, sell their products, and access new markets. And Web3 is this third iteration where it's decentralized, people can be involved in the communities, participate, and so on and so forth. And what underpins that, and virtual reality and augmented reality have been concepts that have been around for a while, but the infrastructure hasn't been there per se. But with the advent and development of blockchain over the last decade plus, this provides and underpins for the native token that's born on a blockchain to be that piece of data that transfers whatever it may be within these augmented realities. And that infrastructure didn't exist 20 years ago when these ideas were first put forward. So now we'll start to see a real speeding up in the evolution of this particular technology, because there are many, many value propositions that you can see across education, for example. Lectures for universities could be done in the metaverse, and that gives real greater ability for interaction than it does, say, using a Zoom platform, another VC platform, and also going into a shop and trying on a dress, which I obviously do frequently, and having my exact size and my exact skin color and hair color to see what that dress looks like is a really interesting proposition.
It's funny you should say that. I'm just reading a book at the moment by a chap called Mick Herron, which is about the slow horses, and it's about spies and one thing and another. And the current book is all about somebody who does exactly what you've just said and all the issues that come up with it. But I think that's been a great chat we've had today, and I think we've covered quite a lot of ground there. I'm going to ask each of you one question. I want a love it or hate it answer. So I'll start with Beth. Beth, do you love crypto or do you hate it?
I love it. It's ever-changing. It keeps you on your toes. It's intricate. I love it.
You love it. Okay, Suzanne.
I'm going with love it as well. I mean, from a tax perspective, if you don't like change, it's not quite the right industry to be with, given we have a new budget every year. So I think this is just accelerated change into kind of a new and different area, particularly where we sit in the financial services, pushing banks, asset managers, insurers to perhaps look at some of the things they do differently, think about disintermediation in the market, and actually, what the consumers want and how they can deliver that best to the consumer.
Yes, I think the point is that it is progressive. It's stuff that's happening and going forward. Ian, you're the last one on the list. What do you think? I'd be surprised if you said anything different, to be honest. But
pretty obvious that I love it. I'm a huge advocate of the technology and the benefits it can bring, and the new ways that people are building products and financial products and services where they operate automatically. You don't need to, use a bank, for example, to place loans and deposits. I think that's what's really excited me. But also the fact that innovation, the way that we transfer value and conduct business, has always been interesting to me. And I see this, as a further development of financial technology, and then also what the internet has brought to our lives in terms of how it has changed the way that we, consume information, whether it be streaming or even purchase goods and services across, e-commerce platforms.
Well, that's simply marvellous. Thank you so much, all of you, for coming and talking to us today. And I wish you all the very best. And have fun. Take care. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.